Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I imagine some people went and looked up the Bob Hope zombie joke, and now half of them are mad at me, and the other half are not mad at me, and I'm not going to tell you why. Every now and then we've had these wonderful occasions to meet young people who are doing magnificent things online in defending the Catholic Church and explaining Catholic teaching and attracting people to the Catholic faith. They're not angry. They're not bitter. They're not. They're just joyful, wonderful Catholics. And mostly we find out about them because Edgar tells us. You really should know this person because Edgar is young and joyful himself. He's about to be, by the way, this is a total discursus, but he's about to be very joyful because baby number one is going to be here within hours. We don't know how long, but within hours. Actually, everything that will happen is within hours, because you can divide all time by hours. But I assume a relatively short span of time we will have a baby. And we'll find out about that. But
can I interject just quickly and say,
yeah,
the end of the show will not be in hours.
I don't know what that means. Is that a?
It's going to be in 1 hour. It's like the only unit you can't measure in the plural hours.
That's a very good point, Joe. And I'm very glad you interrupted my introduction of our guest.
It's a good discursus.
No, I think that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that was super helpful. I don't know why you're taking that wrong. We've got a wonderful guest, and I've been looking forward to meeting her, Amber Rose, the religious hippie. Welcome, Amber.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Should I call you Hippie or should I call you Amber? What do you prefer to go by?
You guys can call me whatever you want.
All right. Except for what, Joe? Just don't
late
call me
dinner.
Late for dinner. That's everyone in the Midwest knows that one.
It's true.
Are you in the Midwest? I don't even know where you are, Amber.
We're still in the Midwest. Yeah, in St. Louis, Missouri.
Oh, very Catholic town, St. Louis, Missouri. Were you raised a Catholic?
Yes, I was raised a Catholic. I was actually born in Chicago, so I have, like, you know, the Pope's from Chicago, so I have bragging rights.
You know, every American who has even the most tenuous relationship to Chicago now is like, I once passed through Chicago when I was 11.
I've eaten deep dish before, yeah, just like
right,
the Pope.
Right. I saw a movie about Chicago. All right. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to belittle your obviously profound connection to the Pope, Amber. I apologize.
Obviously, yes.
I apologize for that.
It's okay. I understand.
One thing I want to get to ask you about before we ask you about what you're doing now is I was told today that you were raised in a haunted house.
Yes,
I
was born in a haunted house. I was a home birth, and the house that we lived in at the time, I still don't really know the exact history about it, but I know that during a war in my town, it was used as a hospital area. But besides that, I don't know much history about the house. And growing up, I was plagued with night terrors. I was almost drowned in the bathtub, pushed downstairs. My sister was pushed off the top bunk of our bed almost. We would hear voices, see shadows constantly. And yeah, as a little kid, it's absolutely horrifying.
Whoa. So
that is wild.
So you were, first of all, we need to have you on with Jimmy Akin sometime. And you can discuss that with him
fun.
Because he is an accredited paranormal investigator. I hope I said that right.
Wow.
But, okay, so did this start your interest in the supernatural, or is it something else?
Yeah, no, this really started my interest in the supernatural. Probably not in the best way, though. So I started really latching on to, like, ghosts and demons in the very secular sense, where it was like, oh, ghosts are just souls that don't know they've died and are just, you know, wandering Earth until we help them pass on through smudging or something like that, which is really dumb. And so I started getting interested in the occult. Quite a lot, actually. When we left the church in 2011, it was when we fell away, I was about 11 or 12 years old. And that's when I really started diving deeper into scary movies, more demonic things, secular things, yoga, all that stuff. And I tried connecting with spirits and opening my third eye. So it definitely did not lead me down the right path at first. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Oh my gosh, we can both do it. We both have our Birdman face on. Joe can't do it. Yeah. Joe can't do it. I did that only because you said opening the third eye. Is that the one that's like right in the middle of your forehead or something? That I don't know a lot about. Oh, okay. So you were trying, was it New Agey? Was it kind of mystically, yeah, spiritualism?
It was definitely paganism. And interesting enough, I was raised Native American to an extent. So even though I was raised Catholic, I also had a lot of paganism thrown in there, which was very confusing, might I add. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of like Native American stuff that I was raised with that I thought was normal and compatible with Catholicism that really wasn't. That really, I think that's what kind of helped with the launch into paganism and all of that New Age stuff. It was dark stuff for sure.
So what brought you to the Catholic faith then, Amber? We're talking with Amber Rose, the religious hippie. You can find all of her work at thereligioushippie.com. So you obviously kept some of the old ways because hippie is right in the title there. But tell me about how you became religious. How did you come back to the Catholic faith?
Yeah, over the course of 8 years, so much had happened to me where when I was taken out of the safety of the four pillars of the church, all of a sudden I was being more attacked demonically. I was introduced to pornography. I started a pornography addiction, masturbation addiction. I had so many issues that just spiraled over time of being away from the church, depression, anxiety, self-harm, eating disorders, you name it.
Oh, you got the whole.
I probably had it.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I'm
the
sorry.
The whole package. I mean, the thing is, I look back on it and I'm like, God allowed me to go through those things so I can now help others who are going through those too. Because I didn't have anybody and I never wanted anyone to feel the way I did. So now I do my part to try and reach out to, you know, people who were like me.
Yeah. But you've received for free, yeah, you're passing on. For free.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know,
I believe that's very scriptural.
Even multiply.
Yeah.
Yes, it's very. And for me, I decided one day, I just, you know, there were a lot of things that led up to it, but I was having a depressive episode, realized it was Sunday, and basically remembered how life was when we used to go to church as a family, eat together as a family, we prayed. Basically, I felt safe. So I decided, I'm like, well, that's literally the last thing I've tried. So let me go to Mass and see if that works. And I was still demonically attacked while going to Mass. I mean, Satan was trying to do everything he could to keep me from being in friendship with Christ again. And he saw he was losing his grip. So yeah, that's kind of what led me back for sure.
Yeah. And did these other things that many of them that you mentioned are symptoms, like the depression and anxiety and all that. And they're not always spiritual symptoms, but they can be a consequence. Did you find that as you came more deeply back into the faith that these things lifted?
Oh, absolutely. I think it wasn't overnight. I think a lot of people listen to some people online and they're like, oh, as soon as I gave my life over to Christ, it was all sunshine, rainbows and butterflies. And I'm like, no, it wasn't like that. It took a lot of courage to be able to purge my life of things that have been poisoning my life for so long. You have to kind of suck out the poison. And it wasn't like an overnight change. A lot of things were habits, but I noticed that as I went to confession more often, did a general confession, started talking more with the priests and understanding Catholicism and the rubrics, but also, you know, Christ's mercy, started understanding how these things were harming my soul and harming my relationship with Christ and hurting him. So that's what really made me kind of turn things around.
So how do you end up being public about all this, though? How do you end up being a person who said, it is something I admire very much that people of your generation and probably the generations coming up are self-motivated, and maybe that's the wrong word, but they have the energy and the insight and the desire to say, I'm going out on the internet and I'm going to call people to the Christian faith. How'd that happen?
Yeah, I think in some ways it's almost easier for the younger generation to do that because they're not evangelizing necessarily to close family and friends, which I think is a lot more difficult.
Oh, how interesting.
It's more difficult to go to your brother or sister who's living a sinful life and telling them to repent than it is to go online and tell strangers to repent who you don't know, because people you don't know, you don't love properly. And so you can say it to them without any consequence in your life. But if you go to family or close friends and you say something, there's going to be uncomfortable stuff there. There's going to be walls put up. You might have to deal with actual pushback, which a lot of people can just mute somebody or turn off their comments and not deal with it. So in a way, it's almost easier to evangelize online than it is in person sometimes.
That is very honest answer.
Maybe to add to that, if I may.
Yeah, Joe Heschmeyer.
I think that's I like the dimension you looked at there, just like the layers of the relationship. Jesus talks about in Matthew 13:57, he says, a prophet is not without honor except in his own country and in his own house. But there's this real sense in which kind of the flip side to it is that you're more likely to listen to a stranger sometimes and somebody where like, you know, their whole past, you know, all their baggage, you know, that they, you know, they weren't always this person that you see before you. And it's easier to kind of dismiss them. You know, I've always said, like, if you've ever changed their diaper, you feel free to dismiss their opinion. Like, that's just kind of a reality. Maybe it shouldn't be that way, but I think it's just one more aspect of why it's hard to evangelize.
Yeah, that's a great point. That is a wonderful point. Yeah. For sure.
So what do you do now, Amber, at The Religious Hippie? I know you're all over the internet, but I just want to tell people again, thereligioushippie.com is where they can find more of Amber's work. What do you do now?
Yeah. So what I do now is my main goal is to bring back people who were like me, who fell away from the faith and due to poor catechesis mainly. I'm not an apologist account. It's more of I talk about my own story and what I went through and give people encouragement and basically a guide to be able to find their way back. Because that's what I wanted. That's how this whole ministry started, is when I was trying to find young Catholic content creators online. This was before COVID, about 2019, 2020. I was trying to find young Catholic people online who I could look to for advice or anything like that, but I wasn't finding them. I was finding, you know, Catholic Answers, which is phenomenal. And you guys helped me so much. And I found, you know, Ascension Presents and so many, but I wanted like the young, like, this is what we're doing to get back to faith and to feel inspired. And this is the day in the life of a Catholic type of thing. And I could not find that. And so I took it into my own hands to find them myself. So I started sharing about my story on TikTok. Ooh. And I started sharing what I was going through. And through that, I found a Catholic community and we started building that. And then over time, we branched off into other sections. And some people that I knew from TikTok are still doing it. Others aren't. I think a couple of them actually work for you guys now, which is really cool. Vanessa.
She does work for you. We just saw Vanessa this morning. Yeah. And that Catholic girl.
Yes.
And
it sounds like you can't remember her name, but yes.
No, that's the Religious Hippie that is your Catholic moniker. Yes. That one Catholic girl is her moniker. Yeah. And then we have, of course, Thomas the TikTok engine here. I don't know if you know Thomas the TikTok engine, but.
I think I do. Yes, I think so.
Yeah. He's one of the best things about TikTok, about the whole internet, as a matter of fact. That's exciting to me that you said, I need this. I'm going to go out and do this. I needed it. And I want to provide it for other people. That's just magnificent.
Thank you.
Who was most helpful to you here at Catholic Answers? If you like, just between me and Joe, and don't say Joe.
I think honestly, yeah. I was really.
It's
going to
be Trent. I knew it. That Trent Horn. I'm so tired of you.
I will say, though, my husband is the biggest fan of Joe Heschmeyer. So,
well,
Joe,
he's
got
a lot of competition.
There.
There's a lot of.
Hey, your husband has good taste.
Those are two
it's
wonderful
true.
Apologists.
We can both agree on that.
At thereligioushippie.com, please check it out. Amber, I'm very grateful that you took the time to come and chat with us.
Thank you.
I would just keep talking with you if I wasn't under a contractual obligation to feature Joe now. But thank you.
Amber, if I may, I didn't want to interrupt your beautiful witness to share this, but I've been sitting on this for 10 minutes now. You needed labor and deliverance because you had a home birth and a haunted house rather than labor and delivery. Anyway,
That was good.
It would have been very good.
Amber, don't say it's good.
You're sharing a serious point. So.
Is it encouraging him? Should I not encourage him?
Yes, don't. Like, he sat on it for 10 minutes.
Nothing works.
He should have just sat on it for 11. Then it would be the break, and none of us would ever have had to hear it. Amber Rose, check out her work at thereligioushippie.com. God bless you, sister. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much, guys. I appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Right back with more Ask Me Anything with Joe Heschmeyer on Catholic Answers Live.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
Are you looking to study Catholic theology in a formal way with the guidance of faithful scholars? Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by the Augustine Institute, offering master's degrees in theology, pastoral theology, and Catholic education with flexible study options on campus, online, or both. The Augustine Institute equips students to serve Christ and His church in schools, parishes, dioceses, apostolates, and the home. Learn more today at augustine.edu.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features texts of daily Mass, prayers, articles, meditations, art commentaries, and more, in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church, on the web at magnificat.com.
EWTN has its own official YouTube channel with tens of thousands of videos covering just about every conceivable topic of interest to Catholics. And best of all, it's free. Every day, EWTN adds new TV shows, live events, devotionals, homilies, and specials to its YouTube channel. Visit the EWTN YouTube channel today. EWTN, the Global Catholic Network.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It takes a village, Joe. Just messing with Joe.
I like jokes that only one person will get.
Yeah, there's nobody else out
there. That works really well.
Right. Boy, I like Amber Rose, the religious hippie. I am so glad that Edgar introduces us to these people and says you should have them on the air. It just fills me with, like, oh, good stuff is happening. Good stuff is happening all over.
Yeah, I have a lot of hope for the future of the church in the U.S. because I see so many young, sane Catholics doing amazing things.
Yeah.
And it's great stuff where it's like these ministries didn't exist 5 years ago. And they're really good and they seem sustainable. And like they're not, you know, like they're not ones where you cringe and think, I don't know how that's going to go.
Right.
It's people who seem to have their heads on, right?
And they figured out that the Catholic thing is know Jesus, let Jesus heal you, share Jesus with other people. It's not constantly complain about this or that or the other thing. And I realize some people just and not all complaints are wrong. I'm not saying all complaints are wrong. I'm just saying we've seen too much of it, and it's wonderful to see them saying, no, I'm just going to tell other young people about Jesus. I'm going to tell them what Jesus did for me.
Well, and, you know, the people who do go in the I'm going to complain about everything direction, they burn out. They either get tired of complaining or they lead to their own spiritual ruin and they leave the church. There's enough of that. Or they cause other people to leave the church. I mean, you see the fruits.
Yeah.
And then you see people who it's like they're finding the good, the true, the beautiful. They're focusing on that. And it's like, okay, which of these things do you think is going to be better for your soul in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years?
Yeah.
And it's not hard.
Well, God bless her. I hope, you know, the people who undertake this to be out there in that battle, there are all kinds of temptations and frustrations and challenges come their way. But the Holy Spirit is good, and we should just keep praying for them. Pray for these young people. It's just wonderful to see. It's wonderful to see old guys like you doing it too, Joe. So let's go back to the phones. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. As soon as I asked that question, by the way, I knew she was going to say Trent Horn.
Trent, yes, I know.
I could just see it in her face. That is a Trent Horn face.
For the record, both Trent and I are over the average age in the U.S., which I just checked is 38.7 years.
The average age in the U.S. is 38.7 years?
Wow. Yeah, actually, it looks like it actually rose to 38.9 recently, but it's not rising as fast as my age is. So I'm still above the median. I'm 40.
And you're going to stay there.
40 and 2 more months for Trent, just for the record. He's also
Trent
old.
Horn is going to be 40 in 2 more months?
He already is 40. He's 40 plus 2 more months before me.
Oh.
So my age plus 2 months is how I remember Trent's age.
Oh, all right. Let's go to Josh in Nashville, Tennessee. Nashville, Tennessee, watching on Facebook. Welcome, Josh.
Hey, how are you doing?
Really good.
Good.
First time caller. That last guest was amazing.
Wasn't she wonderful?
She was great.
Yeah, so and you're just, saying I that just, as a guy who was on hold the whole time. So I'm yeah, very
right.
happy that you
like she
like,
took yeah. your segment, Josh.
No, she's great. The religious hippie is awesome.
Yeah.
Oh. Signed up for her stuff.
Very good, Josh.
So I have a barrage of crazy questions. So I've got an Anglican priest that is a friend of mine, and I'm Catholic. I've lived in Tennessee only about 5 years. I mean, we are the Bible Belt for sure. So it's kind of hard to find a home. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he's Anglican, completely welcoming. I can take communion there. I can do everything. And then I've got another brother that is, he's Greek Orthodox. I am not able to take communion there. It's a gorgeous church. It's absolutely amazing. But I have to be reconfirmed with them. So those are my first two questions. My second question is, my wife, she also Catholic, is really thinking about being cremated. And I have a hard time with that. And I don't know if it's just being a traditional Catholic that I am struggling with that. I don't know.
You want Joe to just respond to that? About the
let's think about the questions separately because they're distinct enough. So Anglicans will allow you to receive communion in their services, but the church would say no. Where the Orthodox, the church says explicitly that you can under certain conditions, but the Orthodox Church would say no. So it's a little bit of a complicated situation, so let me explain. The Eastern Orthodox have valid sacraments because they have a valid priesthood. Even though they're not in full communion with the Pope, their priests are validly ordained, and you can trace the lineage all the way back. And so we respect that and recognize that as long as they are saying and doing and intending the things they're meant to say, do, and intend, then they have valid sacraments. And that is not a particularly high bar as long as you're following the instructions and you have valid ordinations, and they do all that. So Canon 844 of the Code of Canon Law in Section 2 says that whenever necessity requires it or true spiritual advantage suggests it, provided that danger of error or indifferentism is avoided, the Christian faithful for whom it is physically or morally impossible to approach a Catholic minister are permitted to receive penance, Eucharist, and even anointing of the sick from non-Catholic ministers in whose churches these sacraments are valid. That includes the Eastern Orthodox. That unfortunately does not include the Anglicans. And the church explicitly spoke to that in the 1800s. Pope Leo XIII in 1896 had a document declaring Anglican orders absolutely null and utterly void. The issue there is not just that they are not in union with the Catholic Church. The issue is that they actually changed the rite of ordination so that it would be less like a priestly ordination and more like Protestant pastors. And so by doing that, they no longer had valid priests, and so therefore they no longer had valid sacraments that require priests. So that's why, you know, we would say don't go to Orthodox because they don't have valid sacraments for that. With the Eastern Orthodox, you can do it under the conditions that 844 mentions. Like, you shouldn't go to an Eastern Orthodox service or you know, Divine Liturgy to replace Mass if you can get to a Mass. But if you're unable to make it to Mass, if it is morally or physically impossible, then you can go and receive Eucharist at the Divine Liturgy, and that's perfectly valid. However, the East has to also be willing to commune you, and most of the time they won't, because they are suspicious of Catholic sacraments. And this is based on their own theology. Now, there's deeper problems there. I'm not going to get into all of those for kind of purposes of time. But that's why we would be fine with it. They wouldn't. And it's the other way around for Anglicanism. And then your other question was related to cremation. And the church does prefer burial because of the dignity of the body. So cremation is permitted under certain conditions, as long as you recognize the dignity of the body, that we look forward to the resurrection of the dead and the life of the world to come, meaning we believe the body is not discarded, but transformed. And so as long as those kind of conditions are met, cremation is permitted, but it is still certainly the preferred option to do a standard burial. So I think your preference there is completely normal. So hopefully that helps. I know we have a lot of other callers, but I hope that was helpful for you.
Before we get to a lot of other callers, we are about to go to a break. So, Josh, thank you very much for that. I would like to remind people what we said in the first hour. We are going on a cruise. We're going to do a pilgrimage down the Rhine, or up the Rhine, is the correct direction. We'll start in Amsterdam, end in Switzerland, and see many of the most magnificent religious sites in the world, certainly some of the most important sites for the conversion of Europe and for the formation of Christendom. And we'd love it if you'd come with us. Joe's going to be on the trip. I'll be there. Chris Check, our Father Sebastian Walsh, will be our chaplain. Just go to CatholicCruise.com and find out more. CatholicCruise.com. Have you ever wondered about the mysterious, even obscure aspects of the Catholic faith? Dive into the Jimmy Akin podcast, where Jimmy brings together information from many fields as he pushes the boundaries of apologetics. Tune in today to the Jimmy Akin podcast, Mysteries of the Faith, a highly entertaining, informative, and at times humorous show that will help you grow in your faith. Visit JimmyAkinPodcast.com today to subscribe.
Lots of people have big questions about Catholicism. It needs a big book of answers. And now it's got one. The Big Book of Catholic Answers is filled with helpful replies to more than 250 questions about the faith. Questions about God, salvation history, the Creed, the Bible, the list goes on and on. Order your copy of the Big Book of Catholic Answers today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
What was the church like in its infancy? In a word, Catholic. And Joe Heschmeyer has the receipts. In his best-selling book, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church, he gives you the details from the historical records of the first two centuries of Christianity. Right now, get a copy for just $10, plus free shipping if you live in the continental United States. Get more information and order The Early Church Was the Catholic Church at theearlychurchwascatholic.com.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest, and that's a good thing because it's Ask Me Anything with Joe Heschmeyer this hour. There's two lines open, 888-318-7884. We tried to talk with our friend Emma in Hayden, Idaho before, but she wasn't having it. She wouldn't talk to us, but I think she's back. Emma, you willing to talk to us now?
Sounds like you're hating
I'm
on
back.
Emma.
I'm sorry. I realized after talking to Edgar that I was making a Facebook transaction, so I put my phone down. I'm so sorry.
All right.
Were you buying something on Marketplace? What do you mean by a transaction? Were you fighting with somebody?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, also say congratulations to your husband for getting the world's best dad mug from Facebook for Father's Day coming up. Congratulations on that.
Oh, there you are. He'll love that.
Is that what you were buying?
Yeah.
Okay.
I got a cracked one at Goodwill.
You got a cracked one at Goodwill. I have that same one. All right, Emma. Go ahead with your question for Joe.
So I've heard you guys talk about abortion and how the life of a mother can't be picked over the baby, that they have to be, it's an equal thing. But then I heard a commercial with Gracie Christie talking about pro-choicers saying that the life of the mother is always put first. So I wanted to know which one is which.
Did pro-choicers say the life of the mother is always put first?
Or pro-life?
Yeah. Or pro-lifers?
Pro-lifers. Pro-lifers.
No, they are both human beings made in the image of God. We treat them both right. With respect and dignity. We don't believe in killing either of them. So it's
right.
not
so
a matter of
down to the mom or the baby.
Well, you can't save the baby with. I mean, there is a basic reality.
Well, so there are a handful of cases where this could actually come up. So chemotherapy is one of them. So if a woman has certain types of cancer, where it's early enough where chemotherapy could be effective to save her life, but she's pregnant and chemotherapy would indirectly kill the baby, that is permitted because you're not trying to kill the child. It's not a direct abortion. You're not doing anything to intentionally kill the baby. You're trying to kill the cancer. And in the process, you could end up killing the child. And so in that situation, a woman could have chemotherapy. But in the same way that, you know, there are a lot of medicines that you can take when you're pregnant, even though there's a risk to the child, that you're not trying to kill the child in those cases, you might be taking medicine to save your own life. So a woman can choose to take life-saving medicine in those cases. She is never allowed to intentionally and directly kill her child for any reason, even to save her own life. So there's an important distinction there that, you know, like, this isn't... I always give this example. I don't know if it's helpful or not. If a bear is chasing you, you can outrun the bear, even though you know that it means it's more likely that your slower friend is going to die. You are not morally permitted to feed your friend to the bear. Because in one of those two cases, you're directly killing them. In the other one, you're not directly killing them, even if the outcome is the same in both cases, that you live and they die. There's a huge moral difference between directly killing them and not. Does that distinction make sense? Because that is a very important distinction to make sure we get straight.
That makes a lot of sense.
Okay, good. Right. That's what's going on here. We can never directly kill the child. And in the case, you know, you have these amazing cases. St. Maria Goretti. And wait, am I getting... I get Maria Goretti and Gemma and...
I know
Gianna Mola, Saint Gianna Mola. There I am. It's all the G and M Italian saints. Saint Gianna Mola, she decides not to have chemotherapy, and she dies as a result. But her child lives. So you can have those kind of cases as well. But that's a heroic sacrifice. It's not something the church says is mandatory.
Emma, what a great question. I'm glad we did get to speak with you. Thank you very much. What about tripping, Joe? In the bear scenario, I'm now on.
Can you trip your friend or can you trip?
No. Yeah, maybe.
So if you trip your friend, yeah, then you're directly contributing to their death intentionally. So that would be wrong. On the other hand,
what if you pretend like
you're carrying
you
them?
It.
You could set them down.
Oh, really?
Oh, you can set them like if you're carrying them and you're going to both die, you can morally illicitly set them down.
You've done a lot of thinking about when a bear is pursuing you ethically. Yeah. What are your ethical options when a bear is pursuing
right.
you?
Right. I mean, yeah, a lot of these situations would frankly be kind of unbearable.
Let's go to Joseph in Nashville, Tennessee. Joseph, thank you for waiting. Go ahead with your question for Joe.
Hey, good afternoon. First things first, I don't know if the caller Josh from last segment is still on, but I'm very involved in the life of the diocese in Nashville. He said he was looking for a home. So if there's any way that you all can behind the scenes connect us, I would love to try to help him
Wonderful.
His life out.
Why don't you leave your data afterwards?
Yeah, we need you to leave an email address with us, Joseph. And then if Josh will send us an email at radio@catholic.com, we'll connect the two of you. So that's up to Josh.
Perfect.
But just before you go, leave an email address.
Okay, great.
Yep.
And as for my question, it's a hypothetical I've been kicking around with friends for a long time. We know when we're dealing with like difficult decisions and you know, presidential elections, it's not permissible for a Catholic to be voting for somebody who's, like, you know, ardently supporting abortion. But then the hypothetical came, well, what would it take from the other side, presumably the conservative candidate, that would be so bad that you could actually vote for the person supporting abortion instead? And what surprised me, and nearly every person I've asked this hypothetical to, that it seemed like almost nothing actually could outweigh abortion. I even suggested, what if the conservative candidate said, I am the resurrection, and just outright believed, said that they were God? And in every single case, and these are very faithful daily mass going Catholics, they said, well, yeah, that would be terrible for his soul, but for the sake of running the country, that would still be permissible. And so the question that I have for you is, if you were to have somebody, in essence, doing something that outrageous, where you are dragging presumably millions of followers away from Christ with such a ridiculous thing, would that actually be worse than the physical action of killing babies through the process of abortion?
Yeah. I mean, we are told pretty explicitly to fear more the one who can destroy the soul than the one who just destroys the body. And so I think in that situation, I would probably vote third party if you had, like, the Antichrist running against a pro-choice candidate. But yes, I mean, I guess a few things are worth making very clear here. When you're voting, what you look at is not just how important is the issue that they get wrong, but also how likely are they to have a negative impact on that issue. So there's more latitude to support a pro-choice candidate for dog catcher than there is for, say, president, because as dog catcher, they're going to do less damage. And so if you have two candidates and one is really good at catching dogs, but is pro-choice, and the other one can't tell a dog from a horse, but is pro-life, you're not required to vote for the pro-life one there, because in the very particular vote that you're making for dog catcher, the good that they're going to do of catching dogs outweighs the very, like, fleetingly small damage they're likely to do by being pro-choice in the process. But obviously, that's kind of a contrived hypothetical. But the point that I make there is, when you're making this assessment, you want to think about what are all of the implications of what their support will actually mean. So if someone was just kind of delusional or narcissistic or something like this and made Antichrist sounding statements, but they weren't taken seriously, that would be less bad than someone who made those same statements and was charismatic and people believed them and wanted to follow them. Like, when you're weighing it, you have to look at not just what are they saying, but kind of what are the implications of it. Does that make any sense? Does that help?
Yeah, no, that's a great way of framing it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And thanks for your willingness to connect with Josh, our earlier caller. Hang on. We'll get the information if you'd like to leave it. We will take a quick break. We will be right back with more Ask Me Anything with Joe Heschmeyer. There are two lines open, 888-318-7884.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The most original Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
You know, I think we'll always know God's will because the Spirit does not act in confusion. The Spirit will always tell you in peace. If you're confused, just keep praying. Pray until the confusion leaves you.
Mother Angelica Live Classics. Every morning, 2 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul? And that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come. At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
Joe Heschmeyer, our guest. Lots of folks on the line. It's Ask Me Anything on Catholic Answers Live. So off we go to Michael in Missouri watching on YouTube. Michael, welcome. Go ahead with your question for Joe.
Yeah, I wanted to understand like how we respond to Protestants when they reject or when they favor the secularist position when looking at like New Testament scholarship regarding like the Enneagram of Mark or the authorship of the Gospels or even the authorship of the Pauline epistles.
That's a great question, and I want to make you, I'm going to have you say this for people so they know that you're not a plant. You're not a plant, right? Because my episode tomorrow on Shameless Popery is a response to this question.
You're a plant, and Michael.
Just are you, want people to know.
No. Are you a friend of Joe's?
Pay you to call your calling from Missouri, the state in which I live, asking. It, you know, this is just a very big topic in Missouri right now.
All right. Give them the answer, though.
Okay. So you're going to get a longer version tomorrow if you check out Shameless Popery. But the first thing is Jeffrey Riddle in Puritan Reform Journal says that there's a canonical crisis because right now a majority of evangelical scholars believe that the last half of Mark 16 is not written by Mark and doesn't belong in the Bible. And this is taken almost for granted. And you'll find it, again, not just among like more liberal scholars, like Wes Huff believes this, James White believes this. I know he's not really a scholar, John MacArthur. Like you'll find a bunch of people, R.T. France, a lot of very well-known Protestants will just kind of take for granted that Mark didn't write the ending of Mark. And I would say the response to this needs to be this. We have to separate the question of the human authorship, whether Mark wrote those words, from the question of divine authorship. Did God write those words? And so from a Catholic perspective, it's an interesting question whether Mark wrote the ending of his gospel or whether someone else wrote it afterwards. There's nothing in principle that forces us to choose either answer. So the book of Deuteronomy, the ending is clearly not written by Moses because it is about the death of Moses. That doesn't impact the canonicity or inspiration of the book of Deuteronomy at all. God can inspire anybody. So in the same way that like Mark could write a shopping list and it doesn't make it inspired, well, something can be not written by Mark and still be inspired, like the rest of the books of the New Testament or the Old Testament. So we have to keep those two questions very distinct, and many Protestants conflate them. And so in the video I'm making or made for tomorrow, Wes Huff just goes immediately from saying Mark didn't write Mark 16, so therefore it doesn't belong in the Bible. That's not a logical conclusion. So how do we know that Mark 16 belongs in the Bible? Well, an easy answer for a Catholic is the Council of Trent says so. It explicitly affirms not just the books, but the parts of the books. But if you don't have that, and you're just trying to piece together which books you consider apostolic, you have no hope of doing that. Because the secular scholarship is in constant flux, and people are constantly challenging, what do we really know about this ancient document? And 2,000 years later, we have pretty limited resources to know, well, what did Mark's gospel originally look like? Because we don't have a physical copy for another 300 or 400 years. So we have limited tools to settle that ourselves. And so people making these arguments about Mark and authorship are doing a lot of guesswork based on not a ton of information. And as you've suggested, this isn't just a question about Mark, because the Dictionary of Paul and His Letters, which is by IVP Academics, a pretty conservative academic publisher, says critical scholarship only regards 7 of the Pauline letters as authentic, has doubts about 2 Thessalonians and Colossians, and rejects Ephesians, 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy, and Titus. So you have to throw out those 6 if you're just going to blindly accept the secular scholarship. And everyone basically agrees we don't know for sure who wrote the epistle to the Hebrews. Now, the only way to salvage the New Testament then is to realize that we can trust that the Holy Spirit guided the church to get this right, even when 2,000 years later, we aren't 100% sure who wrote exactly which words for some of the documents, because we don't have, you know, metadata from these first century documents. Does that make sense?
Yes. And I was going to say that I think that some of the Pauline epistles were written by Paul's scribe.
Well, so yeah, so Romans 16, for instance, Paul's scribe, it greets the readers. So we know that for a fact. And sometimes you'll find, so for instance, 1st and 2nd Peter, there's really different language with the Greek grammar. And some people have used that to argue that 2nd Peter isn't really from Peter. And I think the better explanation is just that he used different scribes. And so as a result, there are some stylistic differences. But the reality is there were books in the New Testament that were disputed among the early Christians, and there were books that are disputed today among scholars. So if you're going to have a reliable Bible, it's really helpful to have a church that can actually settle these questions that are very hard to settle on one's own.
Michael, I got to leave it there and say thank you. Still quite a few calls and not a lot of time left. So let's go to Plymouth, Michigan. Anne Marie listening on Ave Maria. We're glad you're here, Anne Marie. Go ahead with your question.
I was wondering, when your family members have, like, are diseased, can they communicate to you? Because, like, for example, like, when my grandpa died, my grandma felt his presence in her house, and I was wondering, like, what the Catholic Church thinks about that.
Yeah, that's a little bit tricky. Like, in principle, it is possible for someone to make their presence felt in a kind of benevolent manner, just to let them know that they're safe and in heaven, etc. But you have to be very cautious about these things, because this can also be a temptation towards evil. So I'm going to give a couple of the kind of parameters. So if you think a loved one is, you know, reaching out to you, don't do anything like try to conjure up the dead. But you can certainly pray for their intercession and pray for their purification if you think that they might be in need of purgatory. One of the kind of theological explanations for why this happens at times is so that we are reminded to pray for them and reminded of their continued existence. We're reminded of the reality of the afterlife, that they don't just blink out of existence when they die. So the Catechism in paragraph 2116 says all forms of what is called divination are to be rejected. Recourse to Satan or demons, conjuring up the dead, or other practices falsely supposed to unveil the future, and then it goes on from there. So, like, don't use a Ouija board, don't do a seance, don't go to a medium, don't do anything like that. Any of the kind of magical, sorcery, New Agey sort of stuff, avoid all of that stuff, because there's basically two possibilities. One is you're getting conned by a charlatan, or two, they actually are opening doors to the spiritual realm, but not to places authorized by God, which means these are not places you want to go. And you don't want to contact the things coming through those kind of doors. So steer well clear of anything that tries to go around God. And if you feel the prompting, then maybe take solace that perhaps the person is letting you know that they're in the embrace of God, and pray for them. And if the situation requires it or suggests it, you can also ask them to pray for you. And all of that you can do safely without fear of any of the stuff I warned against there. Does that distinction make sense? It's a question of whether we go to God or around God when faced with that experience.
Yeah, I think that's what my grandma felt when she, like, felt his presence, that, like, he was, like, in a safe place, like, with God.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
I think it can be a spiritual comfort that God permits us to have at times. I think particularly with, you know, a spouse, where that can be a very heavy weight. And God doesn't want you to despair. He doesn't want you to suffer needlessly. So I think there are times, I've heard enough stories where people just knew, or, you know, they had, like, a sick relative, and then they were in another part of the country, and then they knew at the very moment the person died. They had a sense of peace that, okay, they've passed and they're with God now. So I think those things happen with enough frequency. I take them seriously and think that they're perfectly consistent with the Catholic view of the afterlife.
Anne Marie, it was your grandfather who passed?
Yeah.
And this was how long ago?
It was actually on my third birthday, 10 years ago.
Oh, okay. Wow. All right. I'm sorry that you lost your grandfather at such a young age. And God bless you. Thank you very much for the call, Anne-Marie.
Thank you.
Let us go to Michelle in Idaho, listening on Salt and Light Catholic Radio. Michelle, welcome. Go ahead with your question for Joe.
Thank you, Joe and Si. Okay, my question is kind of where to point my aunt. She claims that she's Catholic, but goes to a Lutheran church. She believes that the Lutheran church can give, has their communion is the same as ours because they say we're receiving the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus. She doesn't believe the authority of the Catholic Church because Catholic isn't anywhere in the Bible, and Jesus was a Jew and didn't convert.
And wait, was Lutheran in the Bible?
I don't think so either. And then she doesn't believe that Catholics were given all the, she used the word power when it comes to the sacraments.
Okay,
so I don't know where to send her.
Yeah, I think that there's several issues that are kind of cascading together. One is any well-formed Lutheran or Catholic will tell you we have different theologies of the Eucharist. And if you read church history, I think the Catholic one is very clearly the one the early Christians believe in, that the bread and wine cease to be bread and wine and become the body and blood of Christ, whereas in Lutheranism, the bread and wine remain bread and wine. Christ is somehow present in with and under the bread and wine, but it's still just bread and wine at the same time. It's somehow both of those things. I think that's actually logically contradictory to say that the same thing is both bread and man. Seems like a nonsensical kind of claim because the man is material. And so what does it mean to claim that it's both? And, you know, you can't be half man, half bread. Like I always joke, the gingerbread man is an abomination. It doesn't make any sense. So I would challenge maybe on that point, but on this deeper issue, it's really this question of, well, did Christ create a church or not? And if so, what church did he create? And we see him creating a church very clearly in Scripture. And it's true, it's not called the Catholic Church in the pages of the New Testament, but a few decades later, that's what this same church is calling itself, to distinguish itself from various heretical groups. So all you can really say from that is, well, the name Catholic came later than the founding of the Catholic Church. We'd say, yeah, that's fine. We accept that. That's not a problem. Whereas Lutheranism doesn't exist until the 16th century, and it's breaking away from the Catholic Church. So it's an issue of whether we go with the system that Jesus founded or whether we go with our own kind of preferences or our own kind of self-guidance. And I don't want to be guided by myself. I want to be guided by Christ because I'm a sinner and he's not. So I would kind of press on those issues, but it sounds like there's a lot of things kind of going on there. So the last thing I'd say is you could also ask her, well, what is it about Catholicism that makes you still claim the label of Catholic? And see if there's enough kind of vestiges of whatever she once had that you can kind of stir those up into a flame of trying to draw her back home.
What do you think, Michelle?
Okay. That's a good answer, but she wants proof, and I don't think there is any proof.
Yeah. I mean, look, okay. There's a lot that could be said about the nature of the priesthood and everything else, but priests are the ones who offer sacrifice. So there's a whole sacrificial theology and a priesthood theology. I don't really have time to do justice to either of those. Actually, you know what? If you want, I don't know if this is helpful or not, but I did a conversation with the Catholic Catechumen channel, and it was myself and a Lutheran seminarian. So if you look up Catholic Catechumen Lutheran, the title of the video is just Sacrifice of the Mass, Lutheran and Catholic Dialogue, in which the two of us explore where we agree and where we disagree as Catholics and Lutherans. And that might be helpful for her in seeing both what are the real areas of common ground, but also, like, why does it still matter that you properly choose the right one?
Okay.
That's a Shameless Popery?
That's not on Shameless Popery. That's on the channel Catholic Catechumen.
Oh, right.
But if you look up the title of it that I just gave, that would be how to find it. So,
Michelle, thank you. Thank you very much for the call. Joe Heschma, I said the Shameless Popery, but most of your stuff is at Shameless Popery.
Yep, that's right.
If you want the great bulk of what Joe Heschmeyer does, check out Shameless Popery. You can get it wherever you get your podcast, but mostly go over and subscribe to the YouTube channel. More than 60,000 other people have, and it grows constantly. How many views do you get a week of your stuff on YouTube? Do you know?
It's in the tens of thousands. It kind of depends on the week, but it's doing all right.
All right. And what's on there this week? Anything good? Give me one thing.
Yesterday was Sacred Heart and Pride Month. And then tomorrow it's the question about what do we do with the longer ending of Mark?
Sacred Heart and Pride Month. Come on. Who else is doing that kind of stuff? And you're getting it from a genuine, reasonable, loving, faithful Catholic, knowledgeable as well. Look, I didn't throw any insults in there, Joe.
That was very kind of you. Thank you very much.
Finally, you just accepted
it. Sacred Heart. It's showing really the extent of God's mercy.
I will see you next time, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.